we started looks, and the first TikTok we posted, we got 100,000 likes and 10,000 followers in the first day. So it kind of just blew up from there straight away, and we were like, what is actually going on?
Hi, I'm Lucy.
And I'm Yasmin.
And we started an online community called Econ Girls Club because we had no friends.
Well, no, we had friends, just not friends working in e-commerce, D2C marketing and brand building like us.
And now we do.
Econ Girls Club is the first international community exclusively for girls in e-commerce, and we have a lot to say about it. So we started a podcast. We'll be here each week to talk about the highs and lows of entrepreneurship, building online business, and the problems we face in the e-com industry.
And we'll also be sharing the stories of the amazing women within our community who are all crushing it. So let's get into it.
Layla, Jasmine, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Just for listeners, this is our second time, technically third time attempting to record. Just a little bit of an insight to behind the scenes of actually doing a podcast. So we're really excited to have you guys on today. Without further ado, I'm going to hand straight over to Jasmine and Layla just to introduce themselves and give us a bit of background on their amazing jewelry business, Lux Emporium. So guys, over to you. If you could just give us an intro, that would be amazing.
So I'm Layla, I'm the older sister of the brand Lux Emporium.
And I'm the younger sister.
I'm the bossy one.
Yes.
So pretty much why we started Lux is we kind of noticed a gap in the market for high quality jewellery that was at an accessible price. When we started, there was kind of several like larger jewellery brands, like well-known ones, but the price point, it wasn't that accessible. And personally, I don't think the quality was that great in terms of like having your pieces for a long time. We wanted to create a brand where you could come for like your rings, your necklaces, your earrings, but also that families could kind of buy for their sisters, buy for their daughters, and it would go through generations, and there would be kind of sentimental pieces that you would kind of get throughout your lifetime for like 18th birthdays, 30th birthdays, and things like that.
I love that. And so how old is the brand now? When you first started, obviously it was the two of you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but was it COVID time?
Yeah.
So we started it in 2020, and I was actually at university and my sister was in a sales job. So we actually have 7 years between us. So we're at like completely different stages in our life. Layla was actually pregnant at the time. And I'd gone to Manchester, so I was kind of partying it up over there. And then we started Lux, and the first TikTok we posted, we got 100,000 likes and 10,000 followers in the first day. So it kind of just blew up from there straight away, and we were like, what is actually going on? But
we actually didn't have a website either.
No.
And I was like freaking out. I was like, I need to make a sign-up form to collect even some like customers' emails and stuff so that they kind of know where they're coming when the website launches. Because so I made this awful sign up page.
It was just
horrendous. But we got like I think 10,000 sign ups. And so
what
when
was the
we
TikTok?
Launched
I was just going to ask
so all throughout lockdown I actually had my own TikTok account, so I kind of had learned what kind worked. So the first TikTok I ever posted, it was what you think I sell versus what I really sell. So it was like photos of like rusty jewellery, and then it was a video of like, it was so rubbish, it was like so blurry. But it was when TikTok didn't have to be like really high quality. And it was obviously then I videoed my jewellery, and then it was like a comparison, so...
Wow. That's insane. And so at the time, did you actually have any stock in? Like, had you ordered stock?
We just had ordered, samples.
Yeah, but just hadn't made, like, a big order yet.
Yeah.
Wow,
so we kind of gauged the stock off the sign-ups that we had, and we didn't even touch the size of how much we needed. And, you know, at the time when we first started, we didn't have, like, a sign-up when I'm back in stock or anything like that. So it was just... learn as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And had either of you ever run businesses before? Was this completely new?
So My sister did, you did
So when I was
business.
at uni, I did business management, and like to make money to go to Ibiza, I used to sell sunglasses on Depop.
That's it.
So
I love
I
it.
kind of already like used to buy some stock and put it on Depop and sell it on there. But there was nothing really. I'd set up an Instagram page, hadn't I?
Yeah,
And I had like 4,000 followers.
I mean, our mum owns her own business. My stepdad does, my grandpa does. So I think that entrepreneurial streak has always been in us. When I was younger, people used to ask, "What do you want to be in school?" And I'd be like, "An entrepreneur." And they'd be like, "What?" I was like really young. So back then, obviously, I didn't really understand, but I always knew that I wanted to run my own business just from seeing my mum do it.
That's so
That's insane.
interesting though, because Yasmin and I, we've spoken about this with other like podcast guests as well, whether it's kind of something you're born with or something you can like learn. Because from what I know about Yasmin's family and my own, we both have like parents, step parents, family members who have businesses or have been entrepreneurs around us. So it's interesting to see kind of how that affects.
Yeah, I definitely do think you're born with it to a certain extent. Like, I think people like literally just love to try and flip things and make money from nothing. But then there's also people who just love to that stability of a job. But I personally very crazy would like
Yeah,
that
I definitely feel like because I like throughout uni and stuff, I had like work placement, so I took like a year out to like work in industry for a year, and like I'm just not the kind of person who can be managed. Like I'm
risk.
unmanageable pretty much.
I
Like
love
I'm
that
just
though,
so like all over
honestly.
the place. I'm just so all over the place, and I'm like so like fast paced that I just really struggled to be like I really enjoyed it, but I was like there's something that's calling out to me that this isn't the path for me.
Yeah, it's like when you're put in a box or you feel like there's like a ceiling above you can almost feel like a bird with its wings clipped a little bit. I feel like that's probably one of the best bits about, I mean, many highs and lows about running your own business, but in terms of the highs, having that freedom to execute your own creative vision, whatever that is, whether it's like a TikTok video or a full product range or an entire business, that's the beauty of doing it. Although there's obviously a lot of stresses in that. And I wondered like how you guys manage the stresses as a kind of sister team, like the fact that your family, we talk a lot about co-founding businesses, don't we, Luce, and like who to do that with and who not to do that with. How do you guys find it working together, being sisters?
Well,
There's
obviously
highs
we're,
and lows.
yeah, we argue, and because I think she's obviously my older sister, she's got that like motherly bossy streak about me. So the woman at the front desk actually thought that she was my boss when we first moved in. She was like, "Oh, is Layla giving you time off?" I was like, "Oh, she's actually my co-founder." But yeah, I
It's
think,
just a big sister thing. I think like the good thing about working with families as well, and I mean my mum will tell you this, we drive her insane. We'll ring her and be like, oh, da da da, but then 5 minutes later we're having a coffee and she's like, are you friends? And we're like, yeah, of course we are. What do you
I
mean?
have to say, I did see on, I don't know whose Instagram it was the other day, but one of you had like blocked the other one, and I thought it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I was like laughing at my phone, being like, I can only imagine that must happen.
I
Five
removed her
minutes
from
later.
every form of contact because I just like was like
Wait,
I can't be
legit?
contacted. Yeah, I
Yeah,
blocked
this is
her.
legit. Oh my God, I thought this would be for like a TikTok video or something, but it literally happened.
No, I've blocked her on Instagram, I blocked her on text, I blocked her on Snapchat, I blocked her on everything.
I'm gonna have to ask, what did you do, Jasmine, to justify such
What was it
blockage?
over? See, we have that many arguments.
So
I don't even.
Jazz was just like having a bad day and just started having a meltdown, and we were having a meeting and she just sometimes can't be told, and she was like, I'm not being funny, but you just annoy me. And so this just continued on and blew up, and then in the afternoon I rang her to try and like diffuse the situation, and it just
It's
escalated.
honestly like
Oh
an
my God.
episode of The Kardashians every single
Yeah,
day.
it
That's so
is.
funny. Lucy, I feel like there are so many times when you would love to just be like, "You just annoy me, Yaz," but you
Oh, I
can't
did
because I'm
mute
not your
you. I
sister.
told you I muted you though.
Oh, yeah.
I did.
There was one day where
What
we were
happened?
about to, and I'm just as bad. I know I annoy Yasmin as well.
We're very honest with each other. But there was one day, it was like before an event, and Yasmin was blowing up my phone. And then the next day, Yasmin was like, I'm really sorry. Like, I was just like harassing you. I was like, oh, don't worry, I muted you. I wasn't like reading it. But just turned my phone over.
And then that honesty.
I think in a way, that's like almost the best thing, to be able to be super honest with each other as well. I imagine it's super important to you guys as well, to just be able to be.
I think I'd rather know when I'm driving you mad. Cause...
Yeah, I think you've got to be transparent, definitely. And I think she definitely tells me how she feels.
I don't hold back.
Do you find that you guys, like, in terms of like your relationship as sisters and co-founders, do you also talk about other stuff, or do you mainly talk about business and about the business? Do you know what I mean?
Well, no, we're literally best friends in the sense we're like so close, and we have been our whole lives. It's always been me, my mum and my sister, obviously until my stepdad came about. So we were always three peas in a pod. So like the bond we've got is like so close. So I literally don't go a day without seeing my sister, and she does not leave me alone.
Oh, I love that.
But yeah, we got on so well, and we're such a good team as well, because I'm quite creative. So I do all the social side of it, whereas my sister's very operational. So we work really well in terms of that, because we're never doing the same job. We can really split the roles. But yeah.
Yeah, I think we definitely worked out that was the best way, and the best setup is to have one side doing like one thing and one side doing the other, because if there's crossover, it's too messy. Yeah. And then we just like report back.
100%. We see that come up time and time again, you know, when we're talking to co-founders, especially, there's always like a natural alignment in terms of like roles and responsibilities. And it often just plays into what you're naturally good at. And they're like always the best partnerships when you kind of have like yin and yang, like opposite skill sets.
Yeah,
definitely.
And then in terms of like Lux, do you have a team behind you, or is it mainly you guys? Like, how do you kind of run the business day to day in terms of kind of resource?
So we've got two team members, one doing customer service, and then one in the office doing kind of like brand manager role. So she helps with kind of the socials, the email marketing. It's a bit of like a 360 role, because there's also packing orders and stuff, but I feel like when you're bringing on your first people within a business, they kind of just do everything. And it just works really well that way.
Yeah, I feel like, I think we said this in the last episode that we recorded, we spoke to Ellie Carlisle, who has By Ellie. She also blew up on TikTok over COVID with her brand. I don't know if you know of her. Yeah.
I used the eyebrow gel.
I feel like that's how she went viral with that product, didn't she? She was just saying about like how having doers in the team is so important in those early stages, because you do need people who can kind of do a bit of everything and kind of work across multiple disciplines. But I actually had a question around hiring, and like, how long was it from launching the brand, or like posting that first TikTok, to hiring your first like full-time hire?
Well, we actually hired our first-time hire because Layla was going on maternity. So it was just really to help me out. And then when Layla came back, we just carried her on, because we just realised that it would be great to have someone pack the order so that we could get on with other things. But that was pretty much straight away.
Six months after we started. So I like unwillingly had to get signed, not signed off work, but my midwife was like, you can't work anymore. Like, you are like ridiculous. So we got to the point where we're like, I was like 36 or 37 weeks pregnant, and I was like coming in the office and doing this and that, and my blood pressure was through the roof. So we were like, right, we need to sort this like now, because obviously Jazz couldn't do it all herself, and she needed a hand with the packing, because at that time we were just kind of splitting the packing between us. So we kind of brought Lewis on 6 months after we started.
Oh
my god, I have so many questions around this, and I'm going to hand over to Lucy after this next question, because I really want to ask. I'm so curious around, so you start starting a business and then going on maternity leave and having a baby, because this is like my biggest fear, right, is having to leave my business to have a baby. Like, it just freaks me out, even though I know it's an inevitability at some point. How did you find that? Like, were you able to still like work from your laptop, or was it completely tools down? I've got a human to now look after and raise. Like, can you just tell me about that experience? I think it's going to be really interesting to a lot of our listeners as well.
Yeah, so I can't be doing nothing. So
yeah,
Jazz took the laptop off me just before Lou was born. And then 2 weeks later, I demanded it back. And she was like, you've got a 2-week-old? No. And I was like, drop the laptop off at my house. I need to be doing something. So I was doing the emails, because she would like sleep for 4 hours at a time. And like newborns, they just sleep for so long. So I was like doing the emails, living my best life. I was like, I need to be doing something. I'm going insane. But pretty much, she was 12 weeks old and we brought in a nanny to come and have her for 2 days. And then I was in the office for 2 days. So I barely took any time off. I couldn't though, because it was the very beginning and I was so kind of invested in it. And had I not done that at that time, I don't think we would be where we are now, because I just kind of took a step back and said, these 2 days are my work days. And the other days, obviously, I've still got like all the time to spend with Alea. So
yeah, nice. So it's like a bit of a hybrid model that you did for a while.
Yeah. So I didn't kind of go full and like go back full time. I was just only doing 2 days. But I think it really helped me having that constant and that structure within my week as well. Because I've gone from kind of working uni full time job, and then kind of I wouldn't have known what to do with myself.
Wow. And like, how do you balance that now with your daughter? Do you still kind of do the same thing where you have like work days and like mum days, even though obviously you're a mum every day? How do you kind of balance it? Because I think it's something that must evolve as well as your children change age or like start to grow up. And
she's now at nursery for 3 days, so I work either 3 or 4 days a week. We'll have 1 weekday off, but she's actually starting school nursery in September, so she'll be in full time, and then she'll have like the school holidays off. So I'm kind of seeing that as I'll have more flexibility within the school holidays to spend that time off with her. I mean, she's 3 in June, so I feel like I've just winged it so far.
I feel like we're all just winging it, don't you?
Like my business is winging it as well, to be honest.
It is. I'm just winging it in every part of my life.
Well, you're doing great. So
thank you. It's
obviously like a good method to take. One of the things I was going to ask as well is, in terms of marketing, obviously you went viral on TikTok, and I imagine you focus quite heavily on kind of organic media, but do you run paid media? What's your kind of main kind of, I guess, strategy for marketing your products?
So we had a couple of agencies, but to be fair, like, I didn't really know how to hold them accountable. So at the time they were just running ads, but I didn't know what to say. Like, the only metric we knew was ROAS. So we got, I don't want to say burned, because I'm not sure if we had them now, would I be able to hold them accountable and would I get better results? Was it my creative? I don't want to slate the media, not the agencies. But a year ago, we actually invested in a mentorship where I learned how to run my own Facebook ads. So I learned how to do my own TikTok and Meta ads. And that's been really, really good, because I just think at the beginning, you should just learn how to do them yourself. And even if it's just for the purpose of being able to hold the agencies accountable, it's just a great skill to have. And it literally is like another language. It's very difficult and it's like nothing you've ever done before, but it really, really works well when you know how to do it yourself.
I think it is super, whatever kind of business you're running, like especially in e-com, like managing agency relationships and how many agencies you should have and what parts of the business you should outsource to agencies is going to be so different for every business. But I agree that at least if you understand what they're doing, I'm sure like if you did ever outsource it again, you'd be so much better equipped having learned how to run ads. It blows my mind how many people don't know about running ads still in e-com today. So, I mean, it's like probably invaluable for any business you ever run in the future as well to know how to do that.
Yeah, because I think there's not...
Sorry. No, go ahead, Jasmine, you go.
I was just going to say, there's not a lot out there. Like, I looked a lot on YouTube and stuff, but it was always like, here's a little bit, buy my course. So it's like very surface level. And I was like, I literally don't want to be pushing money into a platform where when I don't know how to do it. Because we actually did that with TikTok, and we were just spending money, and the TikTok rep was kept telling me to spend more and more money, obviously, because that's their job. And we were literally spending like £400 a day and making barely anything back. And that was just honestly one of the worst times, because I just felt like I just didn't know what I was doing. So I promised myself that I was never, ever going to push money into a platform that I didn't understand.
Yeah. No, I think you're bang on. And like, Lucy, like you just said, that the number of people, I was one of them only a year ago, who have no idea about paid media and the mechanics behind it. And I think like, it can be really daunting starting to like look at paid media, because like you said, Jasmine, it is a different language. But I feel like, yeah, I mean, I looked at YouTube videos as well, but the only way I actually really learned was just by doing it myself. And actually, we had Olivia Jenkins do a spotlight session call for us. She's got D. Louise. And she said exactly the same thing. She was like, she just did them herself in the early days to like learn. And then when they handed over to agencies, which like ultimately you do have to end up doing because you don't want to be running it in-house forever, she could sit there and be like, well, actually, I'm going to challenge you on that piece of advice that you've just given me, instead of being like, yes, 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 okay, we'll go with what you suggest. Just being able to hold your agencies accountable because you understand the language they're speaking is so, so important.
But otherwise, you're just wasting so much money. Say, even when I, you know, part of what my agency does is produce UGC for brands, and I didn't understand how to run ads either. So I actually asked one of my clients if I could go into their ad account and just run one or two ads myself so that I could understand the process. Because even if you're doing anything to support that system, you need to understand what paid media teams are talking about. Because I used to sit with like a cheat, I've probably still got it somewhere, a cheat sheet of all the acronyms like CPA and ROAS. Because like, unless you've been told, how would you know? You know?
No, I know. It's, and you don't get taught it in school. It's something, it's a skill you've got to acquire yourself, really.
And I guess it means nothing, like ROAS.
Yeah.
Like, they'll say, oh, you're at a whatever X. And unless you actually know, you don't know if that's profitable. You don't know what your break-even point is. You don't know anything. So,
and you can't Google it because every brand is different, and what's good for every brand will be different depending on every other metric. So Google's great, but it only gets you so far, you know.
Yeah.
I do feel as well, like, I don't know what your guys' experience has been on this in terms of like the creative for ads, but I fully underestimated how much, how like the success of an ad is determined by the creative, which I know sounds so stupid, but it's literally like an ad is creative, and then the media buying is like what an agency does in terms of like building out the campaign and placing it. But like, people are going to buy your ad based on what they're looking at in that ad. And I just feel like until someone literally tells you that, sometimes it doesn't go in. So like, do you guys still do all the creative for your ads, or have you handed that over to an agency now?
No, so I actually do them all myself. We have had a couple UGC influencers do them for us, but just obviously to keep the costs down, I do them myself. But we are actually looking to get some sort of like agency or platform where we can just get UGC creation done, because it's getting too much for me now. But they say, I actually saw a video the other day and it said, they say that your creative is your target, and now obviously because you can't really target like successfully on Meta anymore after iOS 14, so the creative is so important. And at this stage, in order for us to scale, I need extra creative. So I think I need that extra help.
The other thing I was going to ask in terms of Lux, obviously you've got like loads of SKUs. Do you have anything that's like a hero product that like has been the thing that really like kicked your business off and took it to the next level? Or is it fairly even between SKUs?
So when we actually first started, it was a cross necklace.
Yeah.
Which is called our Large Lux Cross, which is still a bestseller now, but more recently it's been taken over by it's called the Emerald Cut Jasmine Ring. So it's a kind of large stone ring with like a half paved band, but we've also now launched the mini jasmine ring, which is a smaller version. And they're kind of the two best sellers. A lot of people are buying now for kind of travel rings or replacing engagement rings that they don't want to kind of invest in a new set, or even, you know, like if they have like swelling or they're pregnant, they'll kind of buy these replacement engagement rings. So that's definitely like they're our biggest sellers at the moment, like the replacement
Yeah.
engagement rings.
I've seen so many ads for, or like, you know, like seen so many posts about those on Instagram and like people like losing them at the beach and Kim Kardashian style and crying, you know, like the earrings in the sea thing. And do you design it yourself? Like, how does the design process kind of, I guess, like take us through it? Because where does the idea come from for all these like different pieces?
So what we do is we take inspiration from kind of like high-end jewelers and stuff, and we'll kind of look at, you know, timeless designs. So like a radiant cut ring or like an emerald cut ring or a specific kind of necklace that we really like the look of. And we'll take inspiration that way, and then we'll work with our manufacturer, and I'll kind of send an image of the style that I'm looking for, and then the materials that we want to use. And then usually she'll come back with like a design. They've got in-house designers. They'll come back with like a 3D design. She will take images of it's kind of like a wax model on her hand, so we can see like the size and stuff. And then we'll get a sample made from there. So usually we're bringing out like timeless pieces and pieces that you could wear for a long time. And that's kind of the process.
Yeah. And do you find, because you've got like, I was looking the other day, you've got like 141 products, right? That's like a massive product
Huge.
range. Do you find like that you need to add newness in order to continue to scale, or is that just because you're just simply meeting demand there with all the different SKUs?
I think because we want people to be able to come and buy the necklace, the bracelet, we want people to have the full set. We've always had a huge product range, because that's just kind of what the brand values are. We just want people to come back for their birthday and stuff. Excuse me. But yeah, I think we do tend to like launch new products all the time just to keep it fresh and new, because I think people get bored very, very easily. And we've noticed that when I'm posting the same stuff over and over again, we see a bit of a dip in sales. And as soon as we're like on email, new collection, new launch, it seems to get people more involved because we do have quite a good returning customer rate. So you're kind of striking them all off if you've just got the same stuff on your website all the time.
And we have certain customers who we'll see coming back, and every single time we do a new launch, they'll pick a couple of pieces and they'll purchase. So we've had like customers who've placed like 20 orders, 25, 40 different orders, and they'll just keep coming back and checking the website,
Wow. Wow,
and they'll
that's
say,
amazing.
like we had like one girl email us, and she was like, "I love your brand. I literally come back every few months and just do a big order of the new stuff that I like." So I think it's so important to keep your product range fresh, and you're also then finding new bestsellers, which is like really
Yeah.
good.
And in terms of
Also,
your MOQs, like your order volumes for each new SKU, obviously you're much more established now, and like I'm asking this question from a relatively like new brand perspective, so people who are kind of just starting out. Would you generally advise ordering MOQs, so like minimum order quantities per new SKU?
When we first started, we would go all out and order like 50 pieces, but we just found out that that wasn't the right route to go down. So the process now is we'll kind of start to tease that we're going to do a launch, and we'll have a page made with the products on where customers can sign up. Then we can see that way the demand for each product, because they'll sign up for when it's back in stock or when it's going to launch. So that way you can say, right, this style has so many signups, we'll order a larger quantity. And it allows you to be way more kind of productive when you do your launch and to have better results, because you don't have any slow selling stock, you don't have any items that people don't want, and then you end up having to kind of sell them off in clearance anyway. So it's a bit of market research that way, because you can see what the demand's going to be for each piece that way.
Yeah, nice. Makes sense.
And I mean, this is like quite a basic question, but I was kind of interesting. Has there been like a worst day in the business? Like a day when you like were really like, why are we doing this? Because I find that a lot of people have at least one like horrible story.
Yeah, I think probably one of the worst days was when we spent $5,000 on stock, and that this was the time where we never used to order samples. So it was literally like just ridiculous. We spent $5,000 and we brought it all in, and it was literally just the worst like quality jewelry snapping, like you could just pull it apart and it would just snap. Like the rings were just the worst quality ever. So we've still got that stock sitting in our office, and
we text all our friends and we were like, listen, come and have a field day. And they were just taking all, because they're not really that bothered, but we were like, there's no way we can sell it.
No.
There's no way we can return it. It was just pretty much dead stock straight away. So,
but that was quite early on, but it was definitely a learning curve of don't over order stock and buy samples and test the items, because not everything's going to be good quality. And just because it looks good quality on the video and the photo does not mean that it's good quality.
It's such trial and error with kind of different manufacturers and different samples, and we'll always do a wear test now, and we'll make sure that everything's good, and we'll wear it for a good few weeks to make sure that the quality's there.
Oh my god,
so interesting. I was just gonna say, I feel like it's always to do with stock and orders. The horror stories are always to do with like something to do with either MOQs, quality, or like shipments, right?
I can so relate. Like, we've been through, we only launched Cloth Project in August last year. We're already on our third supplier for one of the SKUs because they just weren't good enough. And like, you can get the sample and the sample's amazing, and then we got the stock and the stock was different. And it's like, it can be so stressful. So like, I completely agree with you with just like ordering, always sample, obviously, but like order small up front if you can, just to like test and learn. 100%.
And as well, it allows you to kind of like, if you did order a smaller quantity and they do sell out, then the demand, you know, the demand's there. And also, like, the customers will see it's out of stock, they can sign up, and it's kind of like
create hype.
It creates hype, but it also, it's a bit of a snowball effect, because you just can start ordering larger and larger quantities, and if it does end up tailing off, then you can put it in the clearance.
So I feel like we've just asked you what's the worst day. What's been the best day, or a highlight so far?
So I think the best moment that we had was it wasn't the first ever viral TikTok. It was the first viral TikTok we had where we kind of had a lot of stock on the website. So we did a free ring promotion. And we made £24,000 in a day, and that was just like, we were sitting at, and we were just crying, because like, we didn't know it was possible to make that amount of money, and it was so new to us. We were like, we've just made $24,000, and we were in.
Was that just
on
TikTok, like a viral video?
That was a viral video. So it was like a free ring promotion where you got a free ring with a minimum spend, but it went so viral because there was just so many controversial comments of people being like, it's not even free. And then people were arguing, saying they're a small business, they're not going to give it all for free, just support them. So people love the concept of getting a free item with a minimum spend. And we've carried that on for 3 years now of offering a free item to customers. They just love, I mean, I love a freebie as well. But yeah, that was probably,
I feel like everyone loves a freebie.
Yeah,
they have freebies in the UK, guys. You should come to Hong Kong. Honestly, it's incredible. Like, I think there was one time where one of the banks offered a free T-shirt if you opened an account. So opening like a bank account, there were queues like miles long. Mad for a bank account.
Bring the free ring to Hong Kong.
Would
that essentially be the same as? Is that essentially the same as a gift with purchase?
So we do offer a gift with purchase at the minute, but this is like, we'll run it usually once a year on Black Friday, like around Black Friday. And you'll notice, and we do notice, that customers will come back every year for the new free ring. So we'll pick like three or four And they're the same quality as our normal rings, so they're not like a cheaper version or anything like that. So they're obviously essentially getting double their money. And they'll say gift it for Christmas or keep it for themselves.
And you
So it's
just do that
quite
once
good.
a year on Black Friday.
Around Black Friday, yeah.
I think it's really smart. So there are a couple of questions that we ask everybody. And the first one is an e-com brand that's not your own, not allowed to say Lux Emporium, that you look up to or you admire or you think that's doing really well at the moment. And it can be in any industry.
And you can have one each.
Well, it's the same, isn't it?
It's the same.
So
Oh,
at
is
the minute we're
it?
really obsessed with Odd Muse and all of their socials. Like I just think Amy's doing so well and she's such like an inspiration to look up to, and all of her kind of everything that she's done is just like crazy in the past like 3 or so years. So yeah.
I
I
would
would
else have said that
agree.
one before as well. It's very popular. It's a popular choice, but she is killing it. And then the other question that we ask everyone is, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I think just don't be scared to do it and do your research on products, definitely. But also don't be afraid to put yourself out there on social media. From the beginning, Lil was a bit reluctant to do it, but I always had the camera shoved in her face. And I think just put your face out there, get on TikTok, show what you're all about, show your personality, and people are naturally just going to want to buy from you as a person. So,
Yeah, I
yeah.
think as well, like, don't underestimate like organic growth and how far you can go organically before even diving into paid media. Like, you can blow your brand up. So, like Jazz said, get your face out there, just start talking about your products, and it gets easier with time.
Amazing.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us. I want to go shopping on your site now. Do you ship to Hong Kong? Like, genuinely, or will I?
We
We
do ship
do,
worldwide.
excellent news. Okay, that's my evening sorted here. But thank you so much for your time today and good luck with everything, I guess. I can't wait to see what you guys do
Thank you
next.
so much.
Thank you. Thanks for
Thank
having
you.
us.
Thanks, guys. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks.
Guys.
Speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit the subscribe button on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. And to get involved with Ecom Girls Club, search for at Ecom Girls Club on Instagram. And if you feel like taking your Instagram stalking one step further, we are both also on Instagram at Yasmin Sheikh and at Lucy CG.